You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Rose Manley.
Hello, Richard.
Sorry, Rose. Almost caught you out there.
I know, I was just enjoying it. We're doing an evening podcast for once. I was enjoying a little beer.
A sip of beer, but I mistimed that slightly. And Orla Shinawi.
Hello, yes, welcome to the After Hours podcast. This is a bit worrying / exciting.
Yeah, we last convened, we three, in Nîmes during the Tour de France, a few days after La Course, and we spoke a lot about that race and we had some interviews from there. And you'll hear that later in this podcast. But there's been a bit of racing since then. So we thought we'd gather again and introduce the episode and hear Orla's news roundup. What else have we got in this episode? We've got extracts from Taylor Wiles and Lizzie Banks's Giro Rosa diaries. They were released for Friends of the Podcast. Well, it's one episode weaving their two diaries together. Really a great listen. Lizzie Banks, of course, won a stage of the Giro Rosa, so you can hear what that was like from the inside from her in that episode, which was released for Friends of the Podcast. But you'll hear an extract in this episode. We'll also hear, as I mentioned, a few interviews, and we'll hear from the Internationales, who completed their Tour de France as well in France. But Orla, have you got a news roundup for us, please?
I do indeed. And this is going to be a freestyle jazz mashup. Is that right?
Yes.
Or some such. Yes, so we last chatted at the Women's Tour. So since then, we've had the Giro Rosa, we've had La Course and the Prudential Ride London Classic. So the Giro Rosa, first of all, won by Annemiek van Vleuten for the second year in a row. She won by 3 minutes 45 over Anna van der Breggen. So I always stumble over that because I feel like I should be saying Anna van der Breggen. But anyway, you know who I mean. With Van Vleuten's teammate, Amanda Spratt, in third. Van Vleuten had the leader's jersey from the end of stage five, so she wore it for five stages. She also took two stage wins, the summit finish on stage five and the uphill individual time trial. So quite a comprehensive win from her. But aside from Van Vleuten, Marianne Vos had an outstanding race. She took four stages in all, including a remarkable victory on stage three that managed to pierce through even the Tour de France hype. It had all the cycling world a flutter on Twitter, didn't it? If you haven't seen yet, Vos coming up from behind a rather unfortunate Lucy Kennedy of Mitchelton Scott in the final few metres, up a steep climb. Kennedy already had her arm in the air celebrating. Then go and Google it now. Pause us. We'll still be here when you get back. Do it. Actually, even if you have already seen it, pause us anyway and go and watch it.
Easy now, Orla.
Yeah, do come back.
Have you done it? It is amazing. Do come back.
High-risk strategy.
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure about, that.
No, I'm whetting their appetites. Hang on. There you go, they're back. Told you it was worth it. Amazing. Anyway, stage wins as well for the Italian Letizia Borghese of Aromatalia Viano, a first win of the season for them and a first professional win for the 20-year-old Italian. Lizzie Banks with a first pro win of her career as well, although arguably only her second biggest win. Can you tell me what the biggest win of her career has been?
Pédaleuse de Charme at the Women's Tour.
Très bien, exactly. And a stage win as well for Anna van der Breggen. Cassie Anivia-Doma had held the race lead from the opening team time trial, which is won by Canyon SRAM, until stage five. And when Van Vleuten took it and didn't let it go, Anivia-Doma finishing in fifth in the end, which was her joint best finish of her career, matching her fifth place finish of 2015. On to La Course, and Marianne Vos continued her superb form, took the win at the top of the final climb from Amanda Spratt, who had looked like she could maybe just hold on after going on a late solo attack. Leah Kirchman of Team Sunweb finished in second, with Cecily Utrup-Ludwig in third for Bigla, and Annemiek van Vleuten, who has won this event for the last 2 years, settling for seventh after Spratt's failed attack. And then the Prudential Ride London Classic was won by Lorena Vibes of Park Hotel Valkyrie, Hockenberg, continuing a fantastic season and remarkably a first world women's world tour win for her. Elisa Balsamo of Valcar Silence was second, with Cora Rivera of Sunweb in third. Now, the Prudential Ride London Classic was overshadowed quite dramatically by a crash in the finale. Kirsten Wild actually crossed the line first, but the defending champion was disqualified for cutting across and deviating from her sprint line. Her back wheel was clipped by Chloe Hosking, which led to an horrific looking crash. Eleanor Barker broke her collarbone in that crash. And Wild actually thought she'd won the race. She gave a winner's interview and everything before being told that she had to be stripped of her victory, and it was given to her compatriot instead. And that was a subject that sparked an awful lot of debate on Twitter, of course. I mean, it was quite a dramatic, when you see from the overhead shot in particular, it was quite a dramatic deviation. She'd swerved from the left over to the right, and then it was a swerve back to the left again that caused the crash. So it looked quite, dare I say, reckless. We were just talking before we all pressed record. I don't think any of these things are ever really maliciously intended, but it did look quite thoughtless, I guess, more than anything else.
I think also when you've got someone of Chloe Hosking's caliber going down, then that's also a sign that it was out of character, kind of out of character for a sprint like that. I mean, they're all kind of racing incidents, but I think we know that Chloe Hosking is able to read a race, is able to take the best lines, is able for most of the time to keep herself out of trouble. So I think that is also, not that it matters what the caliber of rider it is that goes down, but I think that is a good sign that Kirsten Wild would have come off her line quite severely.
Yeah, I think she did. You made the point as well, Rose, about Elia Viviani at the Giro being disqualified for moving from his line and not causing a crash. I'm not sure if that should come into the equation or not, because, riders can get lucky. On this occasion, it might have been bad luck that so many riders were stacked so closely behind and were caught up in it. And that's not Kirsten Wild's fault. It has to be judged on how radical, dramatic the deviation is. And clearly, in this case, the judges felt it was dangerous. But I don't think anybody's suggesting that Kirsten Wild set out to cause harm or to be dangerous. She was just looking for a clear road and trying to win and looking ahead of her.
Yeah, I think even if the crash hadn't happened behind her, though, just to pick up on what you said, Richard, I think it was a dangerous move regardless, really. And I think it would have merited disqualification regardless of whether or not anyone had come down behind her.
Eleanor Barker's comments were quite interesting. She broke her collarbone and she sort of, came to Wild's defence against a lot of criticism, which, that reflected well on her, I thought. I think that it can be dangerous to judge it entirely from TV cameras and angles and so on. And only if you're in it do you know really what's gone on. So I would defer to the riders, I guess, and they kind of know what's going on. I don't think Kirsten Wild has a reputation as a dangerous sprinter. So, yeah, an unfortunate incident. What do we think of the Ride London Classic? Because it's a criterium.
Yeah, it is. I've never really been a fan of it. And it's one of those races where you think that, as London's my hometown, that I'd be really passionate for this race coming into the complete, really into the centre of London. And obviously it's got a huge event the following day and then the men's race. But to me, it's a crit. And I think they even shortened it this year. So it was only that each lap was like 3.2K. So, I mean, that's really getting into... Yeah, it's completely criterium territory, and it's one of those races where you don't feel like you need to watch the whole race to see what happens. I mean, you need just to see the last kilometre most of the time to see what happened in it.
I think they get a lot of positive PR for having the same prize money as the men, and that kind of shields them a little bit from criticism of the actual race.
I think it gets a lot of positive PR outside of cycling for that, and it gets a lot of people applauding it and saying how great it is that we have a women's race as the same calibre as a men's race. But in terms of the calibre of racing, I don't think it's ever one that gets me excited. I find it curious that it is a women's world tour race. I mean, obviously it's because it fulfills these set criteria, but I find it a sort of a necessary sprinter's race. I think sprinters need their own races. They're never necessarily the most exciting to watch. Dramatic finishes, yes. But as you say, Rose, not one that you would sit glued to or feel like you need to be glued to in case you're going to miss any of the action. You can quite safely watch the last lap or so and catch the rest of it on highlights, I feel. Not to be too down on it, but yeah, it doesn't get my juices flowing.
On the other side of the continent almost, in the most beautiful city in the world, was a new race happening on the same day. San Sebastian, the first edition of the female race there, won by Lucy Kennedy. And that was good. That was on TV as well. And, you know, the coverage was good and it looked great. And it's a fantastic race. Amazing support in the Basque Country for bike racing. And it looked like the first edition of the women's race was a great success.
And I should just go back to the Ride London. We should remember also that it's not going to be a Women's World Tour race. True. Next year.
That's
actually
more of a calendar class than anything else,
yeah,
isn't it?
But, you know, it won't have that status. So we'll have to wait and see what kind of riders will turn up next year for that. But, yeah, I mean, San Sebastian, that was a fabulous race. And it's so nice for Lucy Kennedy also to get finally a victory when she was so horribly denied. Well, not horribly denied.
She did a lot of checking, didn't she, behind her before celebrating.
Yeah, she had a good 20-second or 23-second gap to Jannika Ensing, so I think she was safe. But that to me is a fabulous addition to the women's calendar. And you could tell by the strength of Mitchelton Scott, they had Georgia Williams, they had Annemiek van Vleuten there, they had Amanda Spratt, they had Lucy Kennedy there. So the fact that Mitchelton Scott had given it, well, and all the teams had given it so much respect by sending a really strong team to it, obviously shows that that is a race that the women's peloton wants to support.
Any other races? You've got notes there, Rose.
Yeah, well, I know. I wondered why you kept on looking down
over
my
your
notes
shoulder
and started talking about San Sebastian.
No, it was always on my radar. That.
Well, no, all I was going to mention was there were a couple. San Sebastian wasn't the only Basque races. And these aren't Women's World Tour races. These are point one or point two races. But I just wanted to point out about Ashley Moolman getting win.
Yeah.
In the Basque Country at the, oh my God, that's not the beer talking, that's just me. Nafarroca. Oh, that's terrible.
Is this the beer you're drinking? Is that the name of it?
But a Basque classic race. She won. Ashley Moolman won, and Lucy Kennedy actually came second there because, I mean, Lucy really rides very well in the Basque Country and has already won. This is like the second, she had two wins in the Basque Country this year, which is crazy. But yeah, Ashley Moolman won, and that is the last time she won anything outside of the South African champs was May 2018. And then the last time she won anything outside of the South African champs and the Morbihan races was May 2017. So I'm sure that will have given her a massive boost, especially as I don't know whether you guys saw the Cycling News blog that she wrote about how her Giro Rosa performance was really affected by getting her period early and having stomach issues. And it's a really interesting read. I recommend people go and read it, just partly to hear a woman speaking honestly and openly about how their period might affect their performances on the bike. But she was talking all about her fighting spirit when she wrote that blog, which was a few days before she won this race. So I thought worth pointing out.
Hats off to her.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our headline sponsor. Rafa, of course, I've been following EF Education First throughout the year with their films EF Gone Racing. You can watch them at rafa.cc or the Rafa channel on YouTube. I recommend the recent one with Lachlan Morton, very good indeed, and lots from the Tour de France as well, of course. We're convening, we're melting here in Nîmes, and we're speaking a few days after La Course by the Tour de France. Well, we all got together in Pau a few days ago, didn't we, for La Course. Orla, you had to skip off before the finish, but what were your thoughts on the race won by Marianne Vos again? And well, it was a very exciting race, we both thought, didn't we, Rose?
It was absolutely brilliant, and I was chuffed that it was so good because I felt we were spoiled a little bit the last 2 years in particular when we went up the Col d'Izoard. It felt quite epic, that, and Annemiek van Vleuten's dominance on the top of that climb, notwithstanding, it was amazing. And last year we had that thrilling sprint to the finish, given that it was another summit finish. And I was a bit worried that this year just wouldn't hold up in comparison, and oh my life, it was just brilliant. I mean, we were all gathered in the Eurosport truck screaming at the television when Marianne Vos came up that final climb. It was just beautiful, the power that she showed. I mean, it was tragic as well for Amanda Spratt, but I think we all pretty much expected that Spratt would be caught at one stage. You thought, okay, maybe if she could hold this to the line, it would be brilliant. Nothing against Amanda Spratt. I'm delighted for the finale that it was on the platform that it is, that Marianne Vos not just won it, but the way that she won it and the delight that she showed crossing the line. And we've said this before, that someone who is often compared to Eddie Merckx, given the extent of her palmaris, is still so desperate and hungry for a win. And the way she was punching the air, huge smile on her face, it meant so much to her. And that is just brilliant for the race. I loved it.
I also saw a little clip online of Anton Voss watching. Did you see that?
Hank.
Oh, dad. Sorry. Yeah, Hank, her dad.
Anton's her brother.
Yeah, sorry, not Anton, her brother, yeah. Dad watching, and he was just, you could see, he was absolutely thrilled. And it's just amazing that, as you said, all like, she can have so many wins and still be so, her family can be still so thrilled for her. And I think it just proves that she's back to her best. I mean, a few years ago, if you think about how much people wrote her off, she had
especially
injuries.
Richard, I seem to remember.
Oh,
don't remember that.
Please insert clip of Richard from the past.
I don't remember that. No, but it was a great race, and I think there was a lot of positivity in the paddock afterwards, wasn't there, among the riders who, you know, they had a good crowd, great support, nice atmosphere, and a really great course, a really sporting, testing but not too testing course. We covered it in an episode of Kilometre Zero, didn't we? Will we hear some more reaction from after the race? We both spoke to people. Rose, well, let's hear first from Lucinda Brand, because we neglected to mention Leah Kirchman, who was second on the day. Very good performance from her and her team, because Lucinda Brand was up there as well. Here's what she told Rose at the finish.
Lucinda, can you tell us how that race worked out for you?
Well, I didn't have the Giro legs, but I think if I looked around, I was not the only one. It definitely was tough, especially, was it the second last lap with the pace of Annemiek? Then we had this small break actually with all the strong riders, and out of this, I joined the break with Amanda. And when we almost were catch back, she continued. But yeah, we were with a lot of riders from our team in the group, and we knew we had a good finish with Leah. Even though we also knew, of course, that Marianne would be a big favorite on a finish like this. But, I think we did it good, and we can be satisfied with this.
And did you think that group of five that you were with Cecily and with Soraya Paladin, did you think that might have a chance of sticking?
If everybody really should go full, then it would be like 2% chance, because like Bulls was not in, and I still had quite a lot of riders in the group to chase. So if you really all push it all in, maybe. So, yeah, no, that would be really difficult for sure, yeah.
That was Lucinda Brand of Sunweb. Sorry, Orla, I don't think I got pronunciation quite right, did I?
Well, it's Rob Hatch who keeps pronouncing it differently. I do actually just say Brand, but he always says Lucinda Brandt. Brandt.
Okay, thanks for that. We also, you also, Rose, spoke to Lizzie Banks, our diarist, who having a great season, isn't she? She rode a really good women's tour, she rode a fantastic Giro Rosa, and that team is impressive, the way they've been riding. They're sort of greater than the sum of their parts, aren't they? They always seem to ride as a team, and obviously have a great leader in Cecilia Ludwig as well, who was third on the day. But here's what Lizzie Banks had to say at the finish.
Is it just seeing you be delighted that you see that Cecily got third today?
Yeah, I just found out. It's awesome, you know. So in some ways we had a fantastic Giro, and some ways we had a slightly disappointing Giro. And so to come back and fight like we did today, I'm so proud of the team. Like, we're a small team, but we raced so flipping hard today. Elise and Nicola in the break, Elise got the QOM jersey. Like, we were fighting to stay in the front to help the leaders as much as we could. And yeah, facilitator top it off and take third in such a strong field is cool.
And you guys were always in the break. I mean, there was two of you in the early break, and yeah, then Cecily got into that group. Cecily, yeah, looked strong.
Yeah. And yeah, she did a perfect job being there, because she could just sit there and try not to go through and try to save as much energy as possible. But if it stayed away, then she was there, and you know, Bowles had to chase and put us in a really good position, and then we could warn her from behind what was happening, and yeah, it was perfect.
And how much did the pack think that Amanda Spratt was going to stay away?
flipping heck. I mean, I was dropped on the, like, near the top of the first climb on the last lap. So that was when Spratty had gone. And so I could hear what was happening in the radio, and it's, I guess it's just, yeah, it's a game, it's a waiting game, and who can be the most patient, and you have to play your cards sometimes, and you might wait, and it can pay off, and sometimes it's not going to work, but sometimes it is, and you just have to, yeah, take your chances and see what happens sometimes.
I'm hoping you're going to get a holiday now after all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to have my first break since January, so I've been racing since February, so yeah. Maybe a 2-day break in sunny Sheffield, and then back to it with hopefully preparation towards Worlds. So.
And another interview from after the race, Ashley Moomin-Passio, the South African on CCC. Of course, her teammate, Myra Voss, won the race. And I mentioned B-Glub riding very effectively as a team. And actually, it was a day when we saw a lot of interesting and effective team tactics with Amanda Spratt going off the front, with, you know, Annemiek van Vleuten lurking behind. Bulls Dolman's also chased down a very dangerous five-rider move at one point, very effectively, although they weren't there in the end. And CCC brought back Amanda Spratt for the finale to set up Voss, so that was impressive too. And here's what Ashley Moomin-Passio, who had featured in that five-rider break earlier on, had to say at the finish. Ashley, team obviously had a lot of confidence in Marianne there, did a lot of work to bring Amanda Spratt back, but was there a moment where you thought maybe she was away?
We were pretty confident that she would come back. I mean, she'd put in a big effort. I was with her in the breakaway, and I knew, you know, there was too many teams that weren't in it. You know, Sunweb had a lot of riders there, Bulls and us. So I think we played the game perfectly. We kept things cool and calm, and we knew what we were doing. Our director, Jeroen, was also really good on the radio, keeping us calm. And as I said, was very much tactically planned to keep her just in front until this very last little kick before the line, because of course if we brought her back too quickly, then there'd just be more attacks. So yeah, it just worked out absolutely perfectly.
What's it like to ride for a leader who's in such incredible form and clearly so confident herself?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible, you know, with Marianne and finishes like this, where it's technical and hard, she must be the world's best finisher on this type of finish. So it's really great to see how she, you know, she puts her mind to it and she executes perfectly. There's a lot to learn from her, and yeah, she's an incredible athlete.
Seemed a well-balanced course. We saw a very open race, and you know, we saw Anna van der Breggen have a go, Annemiek van Vleuten mark a couple of moves as well, but it wasn't a course that, you know, allowed one team or one rider to dominate. It seemed quite open. Were you a fan of it?
Yeah, I think it was really a great race today. I think arguably the best Le Course thus far. Of course, you know, I am a climber, and mountaintop finishes are also pretty amazing. But this kind of a course, I think, was a real show for the people. You know, as I said, they're all out on the course waiting all day for the men to come past, and I think this just adds to their entertainment today. They got a pretty good show from us this morning. It was great for us because we had all the people out there really into it, shouting. So, yeah, it was a great day out there.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's the voice of Seb Piquet interrupting this month's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina to remind me to tell you that sponsoring this month's episode is a new sponsor, Heist. Heist is on a mission to take away the frustration every woman has with their underwear.
Excuse me, Richard?
They've already revolutionised tights and shapewear, and there is more coming in 2020. I don't have an awful lot to say about Heist products, ladies, but I think you do, because we were talking about this before we started recording, and well, we're very grateful to Heist for supporting the Cycling Podcast Femina, and I think they've sent you some products, Orla.
They have.
And yours are on the way, Rose.
I mean, I'll confess, I've never heard of Heist before, but all my life, they are properly amazing. Richard, now you may or may not know this. I'm not
Keep
someone
this
to
tight,
judge.
Orla.
But tight.
Can I just say to everyone that you stole that off Orla earlier?
He stole, yeah, that joke, terrible pun, yeah, off me. But tights, and me and Rose were talking about this before, are usually the most uncomfortable garments to wear. I genuinely hate them. I put off wearing them for as long as I possibly can in winter. I'd rather go with cold legs. They're just rotten. I mean, when you put them on, Richard, you may know this, they're like uncomfortable to begin with anyway. And then within about half an hour, they're sagging down around your knees and you're spending all day hoiking them up. They're so inelegant. They're so uncomfortable. Anyway, Heist decided to redesign tights for this very reason. So they're designed to move with your body instead of against your body. They have a whole team of in-house innovators who actually are headed up by the woman who revolutionized swimsuits. Do you remember the fast skin swimsuits that came in like the millennium, which were brought in by Speedo? And they saw world records tumbling and people called for them to be banned because they were so revolutionary. Well, this woman, Fiona Fairhurst, came up with the fast skin swimsuit, and she is now heading up the lab at Heist. For tights. So they have completely rethought tights. There's no seam to them. There's no gusset, which is a horrible word anyway, never mind a horrible piece of garment. And they're beautiful to wear. They're genuinely lovely.
This, I'm so excited about this, Orla, because mine haven't arrived yet, but I'm very excited to receive mine because I'm exactly in the same boat as you. I always find tights, I normally have to buy them at a size too big so that I can lift them up so they don't in the day just
fall down.
So you
wear them with a belt.
Yeah, so I, you know, lift them up.
Braces.
I could just, yeah, wear them as like a kind of like a saucy jumpsuit in a way when I normally get them. But I'd rather not. I'd rather
like
just
a boob tube jumpsuit.
Yeah, exactly, but just all see-through. It's rather nice, but I would rather have tights that just fit and are comfortable. So I'm very heartened by the idea that those are out there and they are winging their way into my tooting flat as we speak.
They're genuinely like a second skin. They're amazing. And also, I just have to say that they sent me a bodysuit that's called an outer body bodysuit. And again, it's just like a second skin. It's beautiful to wear. Absolutely love it. I can't recommend it enough. Now, I know that we do have male listeners, but I would recommend, right, for brilliant brownie points, buy your lady love a pair of these tights, because guaranteed, she'll open the box. She'll be like, what are you doing, honey? Tights, seriously, romance killer. Until she puts them on, and she will love you for finding a pair of tights that don't feel like tights.
Right, yeah, well, that sounds like a great suggestion. Thanks, Orla, and I look forward to your report, Rose. Shop now at heiststudios.com. That's H-E-I-S-T hyphen studios.com for 15% off. Use the code HEIST15 at the checkout. H-E-I-S-T 15 at the checkout at heist-studios.com.
I should say that it's case sensitive, so Heist is all in capital letters and 15 is in numerals.
That's for the discount code, yes.
Enjoy.
How does the offer of free beer sound to you? Oh, it's good, Rose.
Sorry,
excellent. Oh, it's not the best bottle opener. Anyway, that's what the sound of beer opening is like. This month's episode is also sponsored by Beer 52. Our listeners are offered a free case of beer. All you have to do is pay £4.95 for the postage. So go to beer52.com/femina. That's F-E-M-I-N-I-N. And you'll get a case of beer for just £4.95 to cover the postage. Rose, I mean, you're struggling here a little bit, aren't you?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to stop this from foaming everywhere because I was...
Just opened, but...
Oh, God.
You've already polished off a bottle. That's your second bottle.
As you can tell.
We've got the latest case of Beer 52 beer. Each month they deliver a case with a different theme, which generally are geographic, so Germany, Korea, Norway, South Africa, California and Finland have all featured in the cases. But as an independent UK company, Beer 52 are also passionate about the UK craft beer scene, so quite a few boxes have British beers in them. Now, what are we drinking tonight? This is international beer, Rose. I'm drinking a German beer from the Yankee and Kraut Brewery. It's called Transfusion.
It's the only transfusion you can have in cycling.
It is, yes, a nice pale ale.
I've just polished this one. I polished that off very quickly, that one. This is called Chatsy. This is from Budapest, Hungarian.
To the Giro next year, starting in Budapest.
Yeah, wouldn't mind. If I could just drink all of this, the whole Giro, then that would be excellent. And then now I'm just onto my second. I'm onto a Eden Pale. I don't think people should be encouraged I think they should be savouring it more than perhaps we are.
We are savouring it. I've already had this Bivog Tack Pale Ale.
You know, tak is yes in Polish. So you said tak to that.
Yeah, this is Austrian though.
Oh.
But anyway, it's a very fancy design on the can of this one, isn't it? Look That's, at that.
It's a lovely, scary. Very Austrian as well. It's kind of like, it looks like, I know it's got a wheel on it. A wolf chasing a wheel?
Mm. But it was very nice as well, very fruity, and they're all pale ales, actually, these. You're mm-hmm. more of a lager drinker, aren't you?
I am a lager drinker, but this one was a...
Was that a white
this
beer?
This one's a white... The Schatzi was a white beer with a little dog on the front. That was amazing, actually.
Well, if you fancy a crate of eight different beers, all very interesting with their own stories behind them, which you can read about in the magazine that you get with the case, Ferment magazine. You also get a snack in there. Go to beer52.com/femina. That's FEMININ. That's beer52.com/femina to get your case of beer for just £4.95 to cover the postage.
Well, we heard some reaction from La Course in the last part, and inevitably, every year when La Course is held, there was a lot of debate and discussion about the lack of a women's Tour de France, whether there should be one, and whether the tour organisers, ASO, have any plans to put on an equivalent event for women. Well, this year, on the day of La Course, there was actually some news on this front. A story appeared by the Reuters journalist Julien Préteau about ASO's apparent plans to organise a women's stage race. One morning at the Tour de France, Richard spoke to Julien about his story and asked whether he had any more details.
Put some flesh on the bones. Tell me about what you understand is ASO are planning.
Well, the first plan is they're setting up like a cell to develop women's cycling within ASO. They should be operational like somewhere around September. And their idea, the big idea, is to create a race that would be to women's cycling what the Tour de France is to men's cycling, like the major event.
Do you have an idea when, I mean, what timescale would be in terms of when it would be held and when it might be launched?
Well, they don't have details yet on when. In terms of calendar, what is sure is it's not going to be at the same time as the men's Tour de France, that's for sure, because it's a logistical nightmare. What was possible in the 80s is not possible anymore because of the tour has grown so big, with like 29,000 police officers every day, you know, working on it. The organizers don't have the resources, and the government, the state, wouldn't have the resources to, you know, secure such an event.
Do you think it would be called the Tour de France?
I don't know.
It's interesting though, because when I spoke to ASO earlier this year, they said they didn't have anybody employed to look at women's racing as a whole. So this is obviously a new development.
It is. I think everyone's, you know, look on the women's sports in general has dramatically changed. So I think everyone, starting from FIFA for football to ASO now with cycling, you know, they kind of have to. They have to go into it. And I mean, we all know ASO, you know, it's very often, you know, about money, and there's a lot of money to be made, so I think it's a clear, I mean, for them, it's an easy decision to get into this.
One person who I saw at La Course was Gerry Ryan, who is the owner and benefactor of the Mitchelton Scott team, and that's one of the few teams that has always had a men's and women's team with exactly the same sort of names, sponsors. They don't share support staff, but there seems to be a lot of integration between those two teams, and always has been. It's the team of Annemiek van Vleuten, of course. So I grabbed a word with Gerry Ryan, who, as I say, is also the sponsor of the team as well as the owner, at the finish. It looked like it was almost going to be two wins in 24 hours for you there.
It was. Pretty gave it the best. That was the plan for her to try and get a win today, and not always the plans work out, but gee, what a fantastic ride by her, and gutsy, and they just caught her in the end, as they do. I think all the girls could hold their heads up very high today, be proud of the team and what they nearly pulled off.
I know you brought some of your best wine to celebrate last night. Had you left some of it over for tonight in case of a win here?
I did. But unfortunately, all the girls are heading out to Japan and other places. So I've said I've got to send it to them. unfortunately, I won't be with them to drink it, but another race and another victory.
I want to ask just about how the women's team is integrated into the men's team. Seeing you here today, there's obviously, you know, it's more than just an add-on, isn't it? It seems to be a real part of the whole team.
Well, it's never been an add-on. You know, from day one, when I spoke to Shane about setting up the men's, I said, I want a women's team as well. And, you know, what the same equipment, the same facilities and also the same assistance from coaching down to doctors to physios.
And so when you have the world's number one rider, Annemiek van Vleuten, you know, winning the Giro Rosa, I guess that's the bigger cause for celebration for you as Simon Yates winning the Vuelta.
Well, it is. You know, and you know, she's the number one in the world. And you know, to go back to back with the Giro once again just shows her talent and also the support of the team. You know, she's got great teammates, and it's fantastic to see it all come together.
Your team is, you know, one of a few World Tour teams, the women's team as well. I mean, what could be done to help develop the sport, the women's sport, a bit more?
Well, I think that number one, first of all, you've got to have more events. Be nice to see this extended because you need competition for the opportunity for the talent to come through and get the opportunity to race. So that, and certainly the support of other teams to step up with a women's team.
You're listening to the cycling podcast Feminine, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Thank you very much to Skoda for their support of the cycling podcast Femina for the second year in a row. We're very grateful indeed to them, and we'll be hearing from the Internationales in the final part. They have been riding the Tour de France a day ahead of the men. A group of British women we'll be hearing a bit later on. But thank you to Skoda. Now, the Giro Rosa happened at the start of the month, didn't it? I know you were glued to the nightly coverage, Rose.
I was trying to catch up with it. I have to say, some points, because, you know, you work so late at the tour, and then you turn it on, then you fall asleep. But then I'd watch it again the next day. But yeah, I was glad to have the opportunity just to watch. There was a few options to watching it, actually, this year, which is a first, because normally only been one way to watch it. And it's provided some absolutely amazing racing. I mean, who can forget that? I mean, my heart absolutely bleeds for Lucy Kennedy on that stage three finish with Marianne Vos coming up behind. But I feel like that's really captured the imagination of people and really kind of spread out. And people who might not have been aware of the Giro Rosa before will have seen that finish and thought, wow, I mean, that is some aggressive racing and some heartbreak. And then there was another like false celebration the very next stage, which you just think like, oh God. But yeah, amazing. I mean, Annemiek van Vleuten on absolute prime form. I mean, we could tell that Annemiek was in absolutely peak condition and had been completely targeting this race, and so it proved. I mean, although the recon on the Gavi obviously won't have particularly helped her because it changed, but you know, there's incredible performance from her. But I was actually impressed with Kasia Niewiadoma. I know she kind of slipped down the rankings towards the end. She had the pink jersey at the beginning, but I thought the way that Canyon SRAM rode was kind of similar to how Mitchelton Scott was riding a couple of years ago, where they were kind of just learning how to be a team with a leader's jersey and how to protect it and how to ride together in order to protect that one leader. So I thought, even if Kasia, I think, has said that she might have been a bit disappointed with how it ended up, I think she should be really proud about how she and the team learned through that experience, and I think that that's very promising for the future.
I think we have to ask as well, have Mitchelton Scott become the new Bols Dolmans, given the way that they rode that race? They finished first and third on GC with Amanda Spratt in third. The way they took on the opening time trial as well, it was an uphill time trial, and I don't know if you saw on social after that, but Grace Brown, who is the Australian time trial champion, but a much flatter terrain than they had to encounter on stage one of the Giro Rosa, but she ended up with sick on her bike because she dug so deep. But that just shows the level of commitment. They knew they weren't going to win that. Richard's face is a picture right now. They knew they weren't going to win that opening time trial. It went to Canyon SRAM, but they knew they were trying to limit their losses on that as much as possible, and they delivered Annemiek to just the right position when she needed to be there. To finish in third with Amanda Spratt as well, I think that as a team effort was just phenomenal, really strong.
But Annemiek van Vleuten is on a different level. She was last year too, and you know what you hear from other riders is just admiration about how she dedicates herself to her sport, and obviously gets the support of her team as well to take chunks of time away from racing and prepare. It must be quite hard being Anna van der Breggen, the world champion, who has been in the sort of the shade a little bit of Annemiek van Vleuten, hasn't this year so far looked like the Anna van der Breggen of old, or the Anna van der Breggen who won the world championship in the style that she did in Innsbruck?
Yeah, she's taken a different tactic this year. I mean, she was out doing the Cape Epic at the beginning of the year, missing some of the classics to do that, so kind of mountain biking stuff. But she's still phenomenal. I think it's only when, I think we got to a stage a couple of years ago when we were just every time Anna van der Breggen lined up, you were expecting just to watch her do some solo attack and then go off and win on her own all the time. And I think we're seeing her develop into a bit of a different rider. But I mean, there are so many other riders as well. I mean, I think we get a bit too focused on those two riders all the time, when there's actually some amazing. I think Soraya Paladin had an amazing Giro Rosa and really proved that she is so talented on all sorts of trains. And Erica Magnaldi from WNT. It was great to see some other teams coming to the fore and other new riders, new champions of the future.
Yes, let's not forget Anna van der Breggen did win Flesh Alone again, didn't she, this year?
We're in danger of doing a Marianne Vos and Anna van der Breggen, aren't we?
Writing her off. Let's hear from two riders riding the Giro Rosa. Just before we do, I caught up with Taylor Wiles at La Course because Lizzie Banks was a Pedaleuse de Charme last month at the Women's Tour. I thought since she'd kept an audio diary for us at the Giro Rosa, we should present Taylor Wiles with a Pedaleuse de Charme t-shirt. So here's what she said when I gave her her t-shirt at La Course. Yeah, that was a very kind of open race. How was it from your point of view?
Yeah, it was really fun. The course was up and down. There's a little bit of everything. It was a very classic style course, really similar actually to the finishing circuit at Worlds, so that was pretty exciting.
You were quite active as well. I saw you chasing quite a lot.
Yeah, I was working towards the end. I knew it was going to come down to a sprint, and Elise is a bit quicker than me, so I was working for her.
But it was, a tailor-made finish for Maren Vos, wasn't it, in the form she's in?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think everybody kind of played to that, except for Mitchelton. Like, Spratty did a really good job to get away, and Annemiek attacked really hard on the second-to-last lap, but that last lap, everybody kind of just played into CCC, and they chased, and then there was a sprint, and Vos is just unbeatable at the moment.
How do you enjoy coming in, sort of parachuting into the Tour de France like this? Is it, I think there was a big crowd out there today. It seemed like a great atmosphere. Is it something you enjoy?
Yeah, it's a lovely atmosphere. It's always a really fun event because all the fans are already here. It's great for women's cycling because they see that our racing is super exciting too. So maybe one day we'll have more than one day, but I'll take what we can get.
And congratulations finally on our being our Pedaleuse de Charme for the month. And thanks very much for your insights into the Giro.
Oh yeah, anytime.
So that was Taylor Wiles at La Course. Here then are excerpts from her diary from the Giro Rosa and also Lizzie Banks.
Good morning, it's almost 7 o'clock in Sheffield and I'm on the way to the train station. Flying from Manchester this morning to Milan, and it's 3 days before the start of the Giro. We're all flying in today. We've got some team time trial preparation tomorrow. One rest day, and then we start on Friday. So I'm really looking forward to it. There's a bit of fear and trepidation mixed in with excitement, and yeah, I'm just looking forward to something new, but we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to meeting up with my teammates today, but we're going to be away from home for a few weeks, so it's always a bit sad to leave home. Off we go. So we're on the way to our first hotel. It's still Tuesday, 3 days before the start. I've picked up my teammate Nicola Noskova, and we're the last two to arrive, so the team will be complete once we arrive. So one thing I'm really looking forward to over the next 2 weeks is hopefully getting some nice Italian food. I'm not sure if that's going to happen because race hotels are notorious for just giving us dry rice and dry chicken, but being in Italy, I'm pretty hopeful that we're going to have some delicious pasta, and I think that we have a really
really strong team this year, but a team that maybe might surprise people. We I think out of the six of us here, only Sile has done the Giro before. And it's going to be all in over the next 2 weeks for Sile, and to try and get a podium result and ultimately to try and win the race. And yeah, it's going to be a really big team effort, but I think that we might surprise some people, and yeah, we're going to go all in to do everything we can. So I'm just chilling in my room with Leia. Hi, Leia.
Hi. on the end of the final rest day, just before the Giro starts tomorrow. We're super excited. There's a really good atmosphere in the team. I think we're all pretty scared about the TTT tomorrow with the heat in Italy. It's 35 degrees here and we're off at 3 PM. I know it's the same for everyone, of course, but yeah, it's quite a daunting prospect, and you know, there's definitely extreme conditions. But yeah, we're all really excited. We went to the team presentation this afternoon, and it was just a great atmosphere. You know, I've not done this race before, and I think it's already living up to some of the craziness that we expected in so many respects.
We've just found out that we beat Mitchelton, which means that we are definitely on the podium for the TTT. So we're just waiting for Bowles to get in, and we know we're in second at the moment, so we know we're definitely going to be third at least. So yeah, pretty exciting here.
Silly, tell us what just happened.
We came second!
Congratulations, team. Okay, let's get changed. Hi guys, so we're in the car on the way to the second hotel. We've just finished the first stage of the Giro Rosa, and Elise, do you want to tell us what happened?
I was drunk.
No, okay, right, I'll tell you what happened. We got second in the TTT. We are so, so happy because, to be honest, we actually didn't really have a very good TTT. We lost one of our climbers who we didn't want to lose time with. We lost Nicola really early, and you know, sometimes this can happen. It was really hot out there, and yeah, she first TTT, and yeah, shit happens. So yeah, we lost her and we were down to five. You know, she was one of our four riders that was going to go to the finish, and we were down to five much earlier than expected. And we had a mechanical in the downhill, so I was leading in the downhill, but unfortunately Michaela dropped her chain, and yeah, so it was a bit of a nightmare in the downhill. And then so yeah, afterwards then we all did some pulls on the flat, and then I pulled off on the last climb, and then even then it still really wasn't that smooth. You know, poor Elise was dying at the back, and and Leia sat on the front, and we finished the TTT, and we were all pretty upset with how it went. It really didn't go to plan. And yeah, then the time started rolling in. All the big teams were still to come when we finished. And then, yeah, people kept going below us. And then, yeah, we were still in second and still in second. We're still in first. Then Canyon came through. They took the first spot, but it was still Bowles, CCC. And then Mitchelton, yeah. And then, yeah, each team kept coming. And then we were still in second. And then the last team, Bowles, came through, and I think they ended up in fifth, maybe. So yeah, we just couldn't believe it. So yeah, we were pretty elated. We went from being really upset and thinking, you know, maybe this Giro is over before it started, to being like, oh man, shit, we've got a really good chance here, and we've got a really strong team. And yeah, it's just so crazy. So yeah, we're really ecstatic. Leia's full of caffeine and won't stop talking. and apparently that's what I'm like all the time. So yeah, I now feel sorry for everybody I've ever met. But we're on the way to our hotel. We've got a 3-hour transfer today. We're going up to near Turin. We're staying in a little agroturismo farm house up the mountainside. So yeah, it should be pretty nice. It should be a bit cooler up there too.
And then we start in a town called View, which I'm sure I've just completely mangled. We start there and finish there tomorrow, doing a nice circular route. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it. Not going to get too much rest tonight because we're probably not going to get back to the hotel until almost 8 o'clock, and then yeah, dinner, meeting. Yeah, Leia, I'm rooming with Leia, so the chance of me getting any sleep is pretty slim. But hopefully she'll come down off her caffeine high at some point in the next 5 hours. But yeah, we'll see. I've got some pretty solid earplugs, so. Okay, speak to you tomorrow, guys.
Stage one. Well, it was not our best stage, I have to say. We had some struggles in the form of mechanicals. So, kind of a bummer because I think we could have had a really good ride because we were all riding really strong and really good as a unit, but sometimes in bike racing, stuff happens. But we have 9 more days, and we got to watch the mountain bike short track on the way home in the transfer and watch our teammate Yolanda kick some ass. So that was a bonus of the day. And even though we're kind of bummed out, we are trying to stay positive because we have 9 more days, which is 9 more chances, and it's a super hard Giro, so yeah, you never know what can happen. We lost a minute today, but we could gain a minute tomorrow. Just gotta stay positive. Stage 2. This was the first road race stage, and it started on a 15-kilometer climb, which wasn't ridden very hard. It was kind of pretty mellow. No real big attacks or anything. Got a little faster over the top because there was a pretty technical descent, so all the good descenders wanted to go down in the front, and we all made it down, and then we were in this valley for a while. It was pretty boring in the valley, but there were some attacks and little breakaways. And then we came to the final climb, which was this 10-ish K, I think. But it was more of like a kind of a gradual climb along the river. It's really beautiful, not that we noticed. But we had a tailwind, so it was really, really fast. Yeah, teams were just keeping it fast. There were some attacks, but everything just kept getting stitched back together. And then even though I was full gas, I attacked with a K to go, which I'm not 100% that was the smartest move, but I guess, yeah, gave it a go. And then quickly got caught and swallowed up by an extremely fast charging field. And then Aliza and Ruth sprinted in the finish, and Mariana Voss sprint was pretty freaking fantastic. If you haven't watched the replay, you should watch it because she looks like somebody shot her out of a cannon.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for their support of the cycling podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science in Sport sports nutrition products at scienceandsport.com with the code
SISCP25.
Whoa!
We've actually had a few little, I don't want to say complaints, but people saying that's a real earworm and that's been just rolling around in their head all day. So.
I can't listen to Lionel saying it without singing it in my head now. So yeah, it's gone into my ear too.
Well, he was trying to do SISCP25, but then he got dropped, didn't it, quite early on?
Which I thought, never caught on that. Well, listen, quite a few groups of women have been riding the men's Tour de France, route of the men's Tour de France, the day ahead of the men, and we heard from them in the last episode. Let's catch up with them again, having completed the course. Well, Helen, you're back at work, having ridden the entire route of the Tour de France. I mean, I don't know how you sum that up in a few minutes, but how do you feel?
Yeah, it's all a bit surreal, to be honest. It half feels like I've landed back from another planet, and half feels like everything is back to normal and nothing's really changed, but the whole experience has just been absolutely incredible. You know, meeting the team for the first time and then riding together for those 3.5 weeks has just been, yeah, just an experience that I'll never forget. We've become so, so close, and actually that's almost one of the strangest things now, that we've suddenly got time on our own and that we're not all together as a team. So it almost feels quite lonely. And you know, all the in-jokes that happen on tour, most should stay on tour for sure, but yeah, kind of no one else really gets what we've kind of been through, so that's quite a strange adjustment to start to try and make.
So did it meet or, you know, live up to expectations, or was it just something you couldn't have imagined?
Yeah, it's difficult because I think, to be honest, in the run up to it, everything just seemed to happen so quickly, and I kind of, it's one of those things where, you know, every event or challenge that you enter, you always think you've got loads of time to prepare and to train, and then, you know, suddenly that time just ticks away. And I only found out that I was joining the team with about 100 days to go. And so that time just seemed to, you know, completely whiz by. And there wasn't really, it sounds weird, but there wasn't really that much chance to get nervous or think about what it was going to be like. It was all just sort of loads and loads of to-do lists of things that I wanted to get sorted. But having now done it and reflecting back, I mean, A, it's just a massive physical effort that we've just been through. So we ended up doing kind of over 3,400K and about 52,000 meters of climbing, which is just insane. And we sort of say it and roll it off like it's, you know, a normal thing, but actually just a ridiculous physical effort. And then mentally, I don't think we could have really prepared for what we were going to go through, but we had to just sort of take it one day at a time, really.
Were there any tough moments? What was the hardest moment for you?
Yeah, there was definitely tough moments on a daily basis, I think. I think one thing that everyone, me included, found really hard was the amount of sleep, or the not amount of sleep that we were getting. So we were often sort of maximum 6 hours in bed, which, you know, for a couple of hours, if you're trying to wind down and get your body to relax, you know, you're already in kind of such a deficit in terms of your sleep, and the impact that has on you when you're then, you know, feeling pretty rubbish on the bike and not much energy. You feel very emotional. There were lots of tears from the rest of the team. You know, lots of laughs as well, sure, but just huge emotions. I think some of the challenging times on the bike was just, I mean, some of the climbs, you know, the elevation, the steepness of some of the climbs, so stage six, the Planche de Belfi, you know, no one's ever done anything like that. And it gets kind of to be this big thing in your head that you automatically assume that you can't do. And then each day we were just achieving stuff that we never thought was even possible. So those kind of emotional roller coasters definitely existed each day. I think we all expected it to be tough. I don't think we necessarily expected to have as much fun as we did when we were away. The team just really gelled together really nicely, and yeah, we had a lot of stupid jokes and just taking our mind off things, which was amazing. I think for the team, as a highlight, probably stage 20. So that's when we'd done our last mountain stage. That was one of the stages that was cut short for the professional men. So we'd got to the top of Val Thorens. It was pissing with rain, and we regrouped about 500 meters from the end, or from what we thought the end was, and we just really, really wanted to cross the line together as a team. And we sort of waited and were trying to hide under bridges. Some of the girls didn't have their jackets because the van had been moved on by the police, and we just really kind of wanted to kind of stay together and cross the line as a team. And when we did that, it was just incredible. Like, that was our big celebration. That was our last day in the mountains, and we all just kind of had a massive group hug, and it was really emotional actually at the end of that day.
Well, that was Helen Sharp of the Internationales telling us all about her Well, what sounds like an incredible experience riding the route of the Tour de France, doing the whole route as well, unlike the men. Impressive.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I mean, when I think about what the weather was like on that Friday, not far away, that they were finishing the next day's stage at that time. I mean, they were obviously lucky, but it wasn't very nice. And, you know, they went through all 40 degrees down in the south to cold and hailstones and so on in the Alps. So well done to them. And it sounds like an incredible experience that they had, and well done to Skoda as well for supporting them and perhaps making a difference in terms of the sort of campaign with ASO to put on a women's race, as we discussed earlier. Finally, just before we go, a reminder that we're doing a few live events in the autumn. The first one is at the World Championships in Yorkshire in Harrogate at the Royal Hall on Friday, September the 27th. That's set to be the biggest event we've ever done as a cycling podcast. Then in November, we're doing a grand tour. Bristol, St. George's Hall on Monday the 11th of November. Cardiff, St. David's Hall on Tuesday the 12th of November. Worcester, Huntingdon Hall on Wednesday the 13th of November. The Belfast MAC on the 15th of November, that's a Friday. The Arts Theatre in London on the 18th and the 25th of November, the Leicester Y Theatre on Thursday the 28th of November, and at the Manchester RNCM on Saturday the 30th of November. One or two more events to be announced, but you can get tickets to all of those, and I think you can imagine that Orla Shinawy will be at least one of them, the one in Belfast, close to her home, of course, on Friday the 15th of November. Tickets to all of these events can be purchased at thecyclingpodcast.com. Just go to live events on the left hand side of the page, click on live events, and it'll take you to our live events page. Anyway, that's it for this month. What we've got to look forward to next, Rose?
There's the Women's Tour of Scotland, brand new race. There's the Vårgårda races, they're always good. There's the Ladies Tour of Norway. Oh, there's just loads, isn't there?
European champs as well.
De Puy.
Oh, yeah.
Bulls Ladies Tour, Madrid. We'll be in Madrid, won't we?
We will. Maybe we'll record a bit of the next cycling podcast, Femina, from there. I can't really. It's only early August. That'll be early September, I suppose. We might, I don't know, we'll cobble something together. We'll certainly be back before the World Championships, and we're going to have additional episodes over the World Championships as well, so look out for that. But that's all for this month. Thank you very much, Rose.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Orla.
Thanks, Orla.
Thank you.
You're listening to the cycling podcast Feminine, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.